I am so pleased to talk to you. Soleil, sun, is my favourite word. So I am even happier that I get to talk to you on a grey Seattle day.
Oh, that's so lovely. How are you?
I'm great. I met Soleil through the Riveter in Fremont in Seattle and was instantly drawn to her warm personality and her ability to make everybody feel special. But she's also an award-winning blogger, a photographer, recipe developer, and a content creator who's currently based in Austin, Texas. So, like, what are you doing down in Texas?
You know, I never thought I'd end up down here, but I have, I was raised in Washington and spent a lovely few years in Seattle, and I thought it was time to go somewhere a little bit warmer. And truthfully, it's been such a wonderful experience. Albeit I did move a few months right before COVID. So my first year in a new city was a little bit different than I had expected, but all in all, it's great. It's lovely. I definitely recommend visiting if you've never been.
Soleil grew up with parents who continually encouraged her to see and taste the world. It's hard to see and taste the world during COVID.
That is very, very true.
Well, how did you find fullness and creativity when you're in lockdown and you can't go out there to see places, plates, and people?
Yeah, it's really interesting in the way of where my creativity has taken me prior to where I am now. Prior to moving to Austin, I didn't know anyone and I didn't have a job, and I thought that it would all just come to me as easy as walking in a grocery store. And thankfully, community was not too hard to find down here, but I had in the prior, kind of leading up to where I am now, about 2 months before COVID, I had really wanted to take this food photography course. And without knowing, obviously, that COVID was going to hit. And I took it just solely because I really wanted to expand that part of my creative journey. And I just fell in love with it. And then what do you know, 2 months later, we're all locked inside our house. So what better place to cook and work on your food photography when you're stuck inside? So I was actually able to tap into a creative field more so in my apartment than going outward in what is typically the best place and scenario to pull inspiration from.
I remember a phase where everybody was baking bread.
Oh my gosh, I know.
And there was a lot of cooking experiments going on. I can't cook to save myself, so I just admired your Instagram account instead.
Oh, thank you. You know, I got through COVID without making banana bread once, so I think that must be me in a special category of people.
I started a podcast, which there's a hilarious advert in Australia, which says basically, do whatever you want during COVID, but please don't start another bloody podcast. But yet, here I am. Soleil is such a great food photographer, and she actually has a great free resource on her website, which is soleilroth.com. I'm going to spell it Soleil for Sun, which is S-O-L-E-I-L, and then Roth, R-O-T-H.com. And if you go to her portfolio page, there's a free resource, 5 tips to get started in food, which is very generous of you. So make sure you go to her website for that. I'm going to immediately leap into clothes because I can, because I've got two things to ask you about clothes. One is you wrote an incredible blog called 26, where you thought about your 9-year-old self. And one of the things was, would she think that you were crazy to wear what you're wearing? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I, you know, had my birthday in August, and I always love doing, you know, a yearly reflection. And there was a prompt that had come up to me among media or something, and it was kind of thinking about your 9-year-old self. And often do we sit and think about, you know, facing our younger selves, and obviously a lot of emotions can come up, joy, sadness, a lot of just different kinds of feelings. But in regard to what you think I'm crazy for what I'm wearing, I think clothes specifically have always been a huge outlet of creativity for me. not as a flaunt, but in high school I was voted most fashionable, and that was not because per se I was into fashion, but I think I've always been drawn to expressing art outwards, so I've always loved clothes in that way, in fashion. And in the school, when I was going for my marketing degree, I did actually look into and almost apply to a few fashion schools because I really truly thought that was the direction I was going. And, you know, it still might be down the road, but it's been a really beautiful process in the last few years, especially after moving. Seattle style versus Austin style is very different. So when I came down here, I definitely had to wipe my entire closet just because all I could see was black, gray, and flannel. And down here, it's a little bit wider leg pants, wider brimmed hats, a lot of neutrals and colors. And it's been so fun kind of reinventing myself that way. In the same sense, I think I've had this really great transformation in the last year in what I would call coming into womanhood, which may sound so cliche because I've always, you know, that's a growing journey, but I think there has been a shift where I've really just started dressing what I felt like really I wanted to. And I think a lot of things that stand in our way as women is, oh, like, I can't wear that, that doesn't look good on me, or that looks better on her, or something. And I finally just told myself, hey, you are the best version of you. If you want to go wear that, you're going to wear that. So I've been in this whole process of taking out, and, you know, I love a balance between thrifting and buying new things, but I have been kind of reinventing my closet right now to kind of fit the shift inside me as well.
What are thrift stores down in Austin?
Huh?
Are there thrift stores down in Austin?
Yeah, there's great thrift stores. Definitely got a little bit more of a Southern vintage vibe, but I do really like the style down here. I love lots of people wear, you know, the wide brimmed hats just because it's not raining as much in Seattle, so you can kind of do a little bit more things with hats and shoes and not have to worry about that.
It'd be safer to wear suede.
Right.
But you still come up to Washington sometimes. I know that you will work with clients pretty much wherever they can approach you for on-site work. But do you bounce between Seattle and Washington?
I do, yeah. So my parents are still based in Eastern Washington. And so going home for them is pretty often, you know, like, they're still there and it's easier for me to go that way than for them to come down here for like big holidays and stuff.
I remember talking to you, I think it was in the kitchen, which makes perfect sense, at the Riveter. And I think you were working with some recipes your dad had created, or something to do with cooking with your dad.
That is a dream that has been put on the shelf at the moment. But I definitely, one day I would love to have a cookbook of my own. And I think I was kind of brainstorming wanting to do one with my dad.
He obviously has your abilities with food, or?
Yes, he is a huge inspiration in the way that I've learned to cook and taste the world. And we eat very differently in the sense that he loves a good classic steak and I'll probably choose a salad, but together he's always been a huge inspiration to me in the kitchen.
Has there been any cultural influences on your cooking?
Yeah, my parents, I think that is kind of the biggest aspect of why I'm drawn to food, is because I think it's also one of the biggest cultural connectors. And my parents have instilled the value of travel in me from a very young age, and so we often go on many family trips abroad. And I haven't been to enough places yet, but we have been abroad enough for me to, and part of traveling, I think the best part of traveling is trying the food, or else you're not really experiencing the culture. And so from all of our travels, we'll definitely prioritize trying different foods, from street food to high-end restaurants to you know, whatever local bakery and dessert places around. I've always loved food in that aspect, and it really has opened my eyes both in the kitchen, and then just even if you want to like dig deeper, there's a lot of historical connections to different ingredients and spices that are used in different areas of the world. But I do, and I just love the creativity that comes in food and the flavors that I haven't tasted. And I think, I think food is also a very fun way to express creativity and art.
We're both very visual. I love what you said about art being outwards. I've always believed in wearable art. As a recipe developer and a fashionista, because I've always loved your style, I'm sure you know what is the best wine to go with food for pairings. What about the best clothing to go with food? Do you develop your outfits as you develop your recipes?
That is a really great question. I do love that question. I definitely think about... I don't know if I necessarily choose an outfit to go with food, but I was lucky enough to just go on my first trip abroad since lockdown, which was wild and fantastic and very grateful for. And it was, I think, the first time that I had curated my suitcase and outfits for what I envisioned like the embodiment of my trip to be. Not particularly for restaurants, but just for the occasion. And that was really fun and kind of a new perspective I've taken on things. Usually if I'm in the kitchen, I'm probably in my pajamas cooking. But I think in that way, fashion, my approach to fashion and food is a little different, because for me, I love food that has like vibrant colors and different, you can almost say, you know, textures and techniques and small details. And I think my fashion right now is a little bit more minimalistic, but kind of different angles with more neutral colors. So I would say the burst of color and creativity happens with food, and then my closet's a little bit more wearable for all occasions.
Speaking of suitcases, prior to COVID, you won the Reader's Choice Award from Savior. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
And you won the best travel blog. I realize travel's been a little bit hampered, but congratulations. What did you cover in your travel blog? Can we still access that?
Yeah, it is still on my website. It's just my www.soleilroth.com site. I have kind of... In the creative process, you know, you're always changing, transitioning, mix and matching things. And so when I stepped away from travel writing, I kind of went to food photography. I realized they both intertwine. And so I just put them all together on my website. And so all my writings and blogs are still there. And all the photos are still there.
Your photos are divine. They make my mouth water.
Thank you.
And I know when you're not planning your next trip or you're photographing food, which is divine, you love to hike. I don't know if there's much access to hiking in Texas. I seem to remember it being pretty flat, but you're also at farmers markets hammocking. I share with you, I believe in world domination from a hammock. Blading, reading. Are you only reading books about cooking?
No, I actually never really read books about cooking. I typically... Man, I have like really love a good like self-help, mindfulness, growing your anything, mind, body, spirit sort of books. So I'm typically reading one of those. I'm also one of the people that reads 5 books at a time. this is my hack for anyone who is really a reader. I put the books and I read them by location. So I'll have one book by my bed, one book in the living room, one book in my car, and like one book wherever else you read, whether it's the bathroom or your living room. And so wherever I'm sitting, I just pick up whatever book is closest to me.
It's like having a snack in every room.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I'm going to circle back around to content developing. You not only develop recipes and clothing, but you also develop marketing. I know you're a marketing manager with Adaptia, which is a very
good
name. And I believe you said story must come first before anything else. And I think that applies to all three of those. But why is that?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the base of all of these, there are so many stories to be told, whether it's the inspiration you're grabbing from or what you want your audience to know, both from a marketing and creative perspective. And I think if you really know the story you're telling, everything else flows a little bit easier because, let's be honest, there are a lot of people wearing clothes. There are a lot of people cooking food. There are a lot of people doing marketing. But if you have a very different, unique, special story and you know how to tell that story, then that is what people are drawn to. Because I could follow 5 fashion bloggers that all wear pink pants, but who is going to be different to me? Who is going to show me a different story, tell me a different perspective, you know, tell me a different hack, whatever it is that makes them stand out among the rest? Same goes for food. Anyone can make a salad. Anyone can cook chicken. But if there is someone who's put a different twist on it, they're trying to tap into certain heritages and spices or fusion, that's where those things become different and appealing and interesting.
So when you're managing your clients' social media accounts and you're running their digital ads, you find a way to infuse stories even into the adverts.
Absolutely, yeah. I think just knowing the story is not important just for you, but because your audience, I think for any industry, they want to feel like they're part of something, part of your community. They want to feel known as much as you want them to feel known. And telling a story that resonates with people, that is the best way for people to feel like they're part of something. I've, you know, as I've gotten more into marketing realm, I do start to take note of the people I follow and the posts that I save. And I try to think even more about, why am I saving this? Why, what about them is making me want to go back to them and follow them and share their content? Because there's a lot of people that are sharing content, right? And so I'm kind of taking note of, like, what are you saving and why are you saving it? It's kind of a more consumer perspective of, you know, that story side.
What kind of clients do you work with Adaptia?
We are a small digital boutique agency that works or focuses on SEO, so search engine optimization, for a lot of e-commerce and Shopify clients. So I would say during COVID, this was a really great thing just because a lot of people realized the importance of having an online store. And we work with a variety of clients. We work with anything from health and wellness practitioners to cannabis clients to sneaker and composite industry technology. Anyone, we do web design and development along with SEO for these websites. So we're kind of a full package in that sense. I really love it. I think it's really interesting to learn about the digital space and e-commerce just because everyone really does, whether it's your personal brand or a product you are selling, and online has become such a strong force in that journey.
Especially during isolation and COVID, 90% of my interaction with the world these days is through my computer.
Absolutely. I know. We were just speaking but prior to this that all the Facebook apps are down, and I had a mini 30-second reflection of, okay, how's my life going to change if, you know, worst comes to worst, Facebook, Instagram, and whatever platforms just don't exist or don't work for the next however many. And I think that was kind of a fun experiment to think about, is like, okay, is my value in Instagram? Will I feel like any part of me is lost because social media is down? And how would I move forward?
It did add a new dimension. When I'm researching my guests, I always pop onto Facebook pages. I love, if I have the privilege of being connected through a personal Facebook page, I find so many interesting snippets about people's life. And today I couldn't look at your Instagram, I couldn't look at your Facebook, and it took away a dimension.
Yeah, and to think, I mean, we both know a time when you couldn't research someone before you met them, whether that was a first date or an interview, and you just have to go into it blind. And I think we have become accustomed to knowing a snippet or two about someone. And so kind of different way, and kind of thinking back to time, you know, say, you know, no one else knows me and they can't quote unquote stalk me or look me up. I have to, and hopefully present myself with the most honest and best way that like first impression, because they can't look at me up. And I think it's a little bit harder for people like us, because I'm also a very visual person. And so the visual aspect gives me more of like just context perspective, whereas other people that aren't so visual could probably care less about a photo and the description and the words that make up somebody's portfolio and their resume. But for visual people, it's a little different.
I totally get that. A good friend of mine the other day just, you know, she'll film her videos exactly as she is, where she is, without worrying that there's laundry behind her or that she's just come back from a run. But as somebody who sees the world in terms of art, I'm constantly observing backgrounds, clothing, colours, colour schemes, which is what makes me so great at image management, which is what makes you so great at photography, because we can see the overall impact that something makes. These days, the cognitive dissonance, I noticed that during COVID, a lot of my clients, friends, colleagues started looking very different from their online profile pics. And that takes away some authenticity because it's a little jarring. So keeping your images, keeping your visual presence up to date, being authentic, but also being aware that we do research in advance, and first impressions are taken in microseconds.
Absolutely. And, you know, touching on the point that you brought about photography, I think not just myself, but a common photographer's struggle is, do you take a photo of it or do you live in the moment? And there are so many times when I am in a space that I want to take a photo so bad, and I kind of think, okay, do I really want to tap into creative side and take a photo and really just express that, but lose that whimsical present bare bones moment? Or do I want to live in this present moment, not have a quote unquote documentation and recollection of it, but actually experience it 100%? And I definitely go back and forth between that. And I'll say I definitely lean more towards the documentation because I love capturing moments. But yeah, you can't get away from how visual our society is. And but I do challenge people, even ourselves, you know, just to, and even with clothes, like how often do you put on an outfit and not look in a mirror and then go out the door? Even looking in the mirror is so visual, right? And so encouraging that challenging space, but also freeing space to kind of go into something without the visual and seeing what comes up of it and being able to experience it fully.
It is challenging though when your natural urge is to make art, because that's what documentation is, that's what assembling outfits is, that's what creating a background for somebody is. It's this constant urge to make art because beauty is such an aesthetic. But yes, being in the moment. Fortunately, I don't have a waterproof camera. So every time I'm out on the lake, I don't dare take my phone with me. So I have to be at one with the moment. Soleil also works with clients individually. She has this amazing small business starter if you jump onto her website. So if you're a small business, a restaurant, a store, real estate, and artists, there is packages that will include on-site photography. Are you still able to offer on-site photography?
Yeah, so I have a studio at my house here. And so I have a few different options for brands that have products that they want me to shoot. I often will have them ship it here and I'll shoot it here. Otherwise, and this is a great time, but I will be posting travel dates for 2022 in terms of, you know, making the most of traveling and then being able to shoot on location as well. So for anyone that's interested in on location shooting or finding a hybrid model, happy to work with that as well.
Soleil also offers package number 2, which is the food fanatic, which is why I've just put you in touch with an amazing chef I know, which is great for CPG. What's CPG?
Consumer packaged goods. So anything, you know, like anything packaged. So protein bars, candies, soda pops, anything in a packaged good.
Just to circle back to what we were talking about before, Soleil says every brand knows we buy with our eyes.
And that is true.
Which is why you do need spectacular photography to showcase your product. And I've seen your photos. I want to reach through and taste the meals, and I want to reach drink the drinks. And here's another great one, content for creatives. Now, this is for content creators like me, bloggers, entrepreneurs, and models, because I've seen you do wonderful portraits and couple shots as well. How is it different photographing a plate that's a small bite, as apparently that's a word for some of these things, and photographing a person?
I think they are so very different, and that is something I'm learning in the photography world, is that there are so many photographers, but they all do it so differently, especially when it comes down to just industry. So, for example, I have a lot of wedding photographer friends that I admire highly. I personally don't think I would ever go into that field because it is a whole nother realm, a whole different aspect, vision, lighting, styling than food. I would say the main difference is with food, especially, you know, in studio, is food is not moving. The light is not changing. You keep it there in the same setting and you can work with it for 7 hours and it's going to be the same plate. Meanwhile, with a person, it's a much more action movement filled shot, whether, you know, from even just small adjustments in their body and their posture to different lighting and indoor, outdoor, different editorial vibes, etc. So it is very different, but I do love, in terms of lifestyle, I do love capturing small portrait moments for people. I think that is really kind of a nice step away from food photography. But those are kind of the two realms that I enjoy working in.
And you can also photograph chefs with their food.
Exactly.
What's some tips for the home photographers to help their food look great on social media?
Ooh, this is a fun question. Okay, so just to share with the world, I actually have only been doing food photography for, what are we at? About a year and a half, which is wild, just knowing how many clients I have and knowing that really anyone can start, and I promise you there will be work for you if you know, dedicate your time to it. I would say natural light is a huge help, and so if you have a window, you've already got a good setup, a nice like well-lit area, and I would stray away from any artificially lit areas. So, you know, your light bulbs that have cooler, warmer tones, a natural window on a clear day is going to work wonders. Angle wise, there's a lot of great tips. I'm trying to think, you can even start with your iPhone. I would say there's three different angles and perspectives you can work with food photography. There's the overhead shot, which is the flat lay shot you often see with big spreads, things that have toppings, items that are flat, so soups and oatmeal bowls, things that don't have depth. Those are great for overhead shots. Then you have your 45 degree angle, so you would bring it and you would be looking at it from where I'd be looking at a table. That's great for anything from, you know, cake slices that have a little bit more dimension to possible sauce shots were in poor shots. And then you have your straight on shots, so that would be looking at it perpendicularly straight from the side of the table. That's great for things that don't have depth but have height, so think of yogurt parfaits, maybe a stack of pancakes, things that have more visual texture from the side than from the top.
And your banana bread, I mean, that depending on whether it's sliced.
Exactly. I think the best thing with food photography is you don't need to overthink it. Make it look natural. There's no banana bread that's ever untouched. So slice into it, break a few crumbs around, slather some butter, get a knife out, you know, make it real. Make it look like people have been eating the food.
So I don't need to brush it with fake oils or touch it up with food coloring or any of those supposed things that people do to food that, you know, to fake the effect. I can just go down to the kitchen and make something and take a photo myself without needing to resort to finding plastic sushi.
Absolutely, yeah. I only ever work with real food. There's only, you know, in more corporate editorial settings, there might be some crazy hacks, but for me, I use pretty much the ingredients at hand. There are a few different tips and tricks I might use, But apart from that, I always am shooting real food.
That brings me back to, I loved being in Tokyo because most of the restaurants would have plastic food outside in the window, so you knew ordering, because I couldn't always read the kanji or the explanation, but I could point. And I wish menus had photos of every dish, because my brain doesn't translate ingredients into what the actual meal will be. So here's to all menus having photos.
Hire me. I'll take your photos for you for restaurants. That's I think something restaurants, you know, it's kind of transitioning and trying to not convince them, but show them the importance of good food or good food photos, because there'll be a lot of restaurants or businesses say, oh, you know, I have my iPhone, I feel fine. But then, you know, there's consumers like you that say, I wish there was we do eat with our eyes as well. So consume with our eyes, we eat with our eyes, we buy with our eyes. And so the essence of a good photo, especially for food, is unparalleled. When I'm researching, I am looking at the photos of food. That I could care less about the menu itself. It's the photos that really do it for me.
Especially since a lot of the terms that are used are jargon that I don't understand and I can't visualize the dish. And it's great for accessibility for those of us you know, with dyslexia or who have trouble deciphering a list of ingredients. So hire restaurants, if you're listening, find Soleil, or at least read that free resource on 5 tips to get started in food photography. Especially since a few restaurants I've been to lately, I'm scanning the barcode. So upload those digital images. I'm back on your website and there is a fantastic thing that says this or that, which is that like a what's hot and what's not? Or is that just a preference?
It's more about just me kind of, you know, getting to know me a little bit more if you don't know me. Just a fun way for people to get to know my preferences. Just a little fun fact, nothing in reference to.
So the X's, because you've X'd in boxes, that doesn't mean no. Is that your version of a check mark?
Yeah, that's my choice.
Well, okay, I'm coffee, you're matcha.
Yeah.
You're mountains, where I'm beach. We both agree on summer. We're both morning people. Sweets and savory. Oh, sorry. I'm going to have to head towards the sweets for that one. Circling back to one of your other many skills, if people are posting their photos on a website or Instagram, or they're posting anything with a story, what are some tips for SEO?
Great question. So I would say in regarding to photography, and content, actually photography, I feel like falls in its own realm. And this is why, because with SEO, you are able to use words to use, you're able to use keywords, long tail short form or long tail or short tail keywords to get consumers to your website. So if I'm selling white sneakers, I can utilize white sneakers to wear to work, the best white sneakers for short feet, or, you know, anything, white sneakers that go well with fall outfits. You can utilize that with photography, especially photography websites. There's not a lot of writing content on photography websites. So if you are a photographer, as boring and maybe school as a blog or writing seems, because you really want to highlight your photography work, there is something to be said for writing, blogging keywords for photographers. When posting on other sites, I would just say if you're selling a product, you definitely want to update your meta title and descriptions. So that would be for those that aren't in SEO, say you're searching for white sneakers. The first thing that you see on Google is Nike. You see the title. It's that little short blurb on Google's homepage when you are looking for search results. And you can optimize and rewrite those that are more appealing.
So can I check I understand? Do you embed SEO within a photo? Is that the photo's image description, or are you talking more about the content around the photo?
So there's a few different things. So you can edit the alt tag, which is basically the name for the photo that Google reads on the back end. But then also, if you are typing in, let's see if this is going to work.
I love that we do these things live.
I know. If you type in Soleil Roth photography in Google, and the first result is SoleilRoth.com. You'll see the header says SoleilRoth: Austin photographer - food photographer and then below there's about 150 characters that say award-winning blogger, food photographer, recipe developer, and content creator based in Austin. Let's work together. So for each web page on my blog, I can edit the title and the subtitle description to be something that is optimized for people searching. So if you're looking for something else, you know, if you scroll down and maybe second to bottom result says SoleilRoth Archives - Sever, and then the subtitle says recipes, photo galleries, food, drink, shop, travel, style, plus home. That doesn't really make sense. No one's going to know what archives - Sever and then that subtitle of just what's on the website. So you can go in and really for every page in your website, you can edit that. So if I were to go into Sever's website, I can't, but if I were to, I would probably rename it to SoleilRoth, you know, writing samples - Austin photographer and content creator. And then below would be, here are the blogs written by SoleilRoth. If you're interested in contacting her or want to know more about her writing, contact her at ... So it's a little bit more descriptive. So if someone was searching for Austin photographer or SoleilRoth, this would pop up higher than this kind of unintentional subtitle, if that makes sense.
Are dashes important?
I don't think they're as important, no. I think it's just an easier way to kind of fit in a short form. It is nice when you are trying to rank for a short-term keyword. So if you were to say food and lifestyle photographer that makes ... I don't think the dashes are so important. It just sometimes is able to read it all together versus broken up by dashes.
Right. It turns it into a sentence or a phrase as opposed to random words. When I'm on the Google page, hello Google, you are search engine of choice today. At the bottom on the right-hand side, it has long tail keywords. It actually shows me some of the long tail keywords, which I've never really noticed before. What's the difference between a long tail keyword and a short tail keyword?
So I would just say the easiest way to understand is a long tail keyword is a much more specific keyword. So a short tail keyword would be white sneakers. That is two words. But a long tail keyword would be best white sneakers of 2021 to buy. So that is very specific to the time frame, the people that are buying it, the people that are looking right now, versus, you know, how many people are going to be searching that in the Google search bar versus just typing in white sneakers, because white sneakers is so wide. White sneakers for what? White sneakers for dogs, white sneakers for kids. Do you want photos of white sneakers? Do you want to buy white sneakers? So that is a short form. Long form is much more specific. Something that's really interesting to me in the SEO world, as we're shifting over to voice assistance, which you kind of just touched on for Google, same thing with Alexa, how different searching on our computers or typing is versus voice searches. So for example, on Google, you might type in white S and you know how white sneakers would just pop up and you click it and that's all you do. But when you're sitting down and you say, hey Siri or whoever, Alexa, Google, and then you say, please give me results for the best white sneakers in Austin, Texas. That automatically turns into a long form keyword based on how we talk in voice search. So SEO definitely has its quirks in trying to account for both visual typing searches and now with the changing world of voice searches.
I've had hilarious results with talking to why. I think it might be my accent, but the results that come up have been bloody hilarious. The long tail, I think, was first coined back in 2008 by Chris Anderson. There's a great book, The Long Tail, Why the Future of Business is Selling More of Less. selling less of more, excuse me. And it's all about the power of the niche. Soleil, this was amazing. I'm going to put you in touch with Venus Serene. She just created, completed Feast of Nations 2021. Every year she runs the most incredible competition where women from all different cultures submit dishes. And unfortunately, it's been virtual the last couple of years because even though I don't cook, boy, do I eat. Example, you know, 40, 50, 60 dishes. So wear loose pants. It's absolutely fantastic. And I was just voting on the competition entries, which are based on photos. So I'm going to put you two in touch. And
perfect.
Yeah, it was so lovely to talk to you. It's been far too long. I'm imagining you in front of me in the kitchen at the Riveter, and I wish I could give you a hug.
Oh, well, I'm sending you a hug right back. Hopefully our paths will cross soon. And it was so lovely chatting with you. And hopefully we'll chat soon again.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Soleil. It was wonderful. Aroha. Bye.
Bye.